The Bible is crucial for our lives as believers, but some Christians around the world don't have their own copy of God's Word. That's why Crossway is committed to distributing 1 million ESV Bibles to believers in need globally. By God's grace, we've already raised enough to distribute 500,000 copies of the Bible, but we need your help to get more Bibles into the hands of more believers around the world. Between now and Mother's Day, our aim is to raise $200,000, enough to fund the distribution of 50,000 more Bibles, with a special emphasis on reaching women throughout the Global South. Every $4 you give will provide a copy of God's Word to someone who may have never owned their own Bible before. Would you prayerfully consider helping us reach this goal for the good of the global church and the glory of God? To learn more or donate, visit crossway.org/1,000,000Bibles. That's crossway.org/1,000,000Bibles. Thanks. What is your body for? And how does it relate to your identity, that which makes you, you? Those might not be questions that we ask ourselves all that often, but they're questions that need to be answered, especially in our world today. Confusion abounds related to why and how our physical bodies matter, especially in relation to the brokenness that we all feel because of sin. Today I'm talking with Sam Alberry about the eternal significance of our physical bodies. Sam speaks around the world as a preacher and apologist, and is the author of What God Has to Say About Our Bodies, How the Gospel is Good News for Our Physical Selves, from Crossway. Let's get started. Well, Sam, thank you so much for joining me again on the Crossway podcast.
I'm glad to be with you.
So, Sam, a book about the importance of our physical bodies just seems so incredibly relevant right now in our culture today. It seems to me like so many of the most important and often controversial issues in our culture today connect in some way, usually a pretty direct way, to our embodied selves, our embodied lives. Do you resonate with that feeling? Was that in your mind as you started to work on this book?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's a perennial issue in the sense of we all have bodies, we all need to think about our bodies. But you're right, there are so many areas of cultural life, and particularly of confusion within the church, where what we think about the body seems upstream of a lot of the things we're talking about. Mm. So it seems to be a thread in a lot of the issues that we're discussing. And I was finding pastorally as well, everything from gender identity to eating disorders to sexual ethics, all of it is to do with what is our body for? How do we even know what our body is for and whether we're using it in the right way, and how should we think about it? So, yeah, it does seem particularly important given our cultural setting.
Mm. I mean, I wonder if you can put on your cultural analysis, maybe even a little bit of a historian's hat for a moment. What do you think it is about this moment right now that has brought this issue of our physical bodies to the fore of so many of our conversations as a society?
Our understanding of what makes us who we are has shifted. And this has taken a long time, but we're sort of really reaching the sort of the fruits of it now. Increasingly, who you are is who you feel yourself to be deep down inside. Mm. That's the real you. And friends who have to watch more Disney movies than I do tell me that that's the plot of every Disney movie in the last 10 years, is you've got to be true to yourself. You've got to figure out who you are and be true to that. If that is the case, if we're prioritizing a sort of inner sense of who we are, then it really means that our bodies are incidental to our identity. Mm. And so they don't give us any kind of guidance in and of themselves. We can override them, we can change them, we can switch them out. They are seen as malleable, and they're simply the blank canvas on which we paint our true inner sense of self-identity, and often literally paint that true inner sense of self-identity. So it seems to be the culmination of a very long process. We've gone from a very communal to an individual sense of the self, and we've now gone into a very internal sense of who we are.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to dig into that a little bit more as we go. But maybe kind of taking a broad look, it seems like our broader culture today that we all live in, it's constantly pushing in many different ways conflicting messages about our bodies. On the one hand, we live in a world where physical beauty, where physical health, athletic prowess, all those things are held in high esteem and are incredibly influential in our culture on things like entertainment, what we buy, how we spend our money, what we spend our time on. And yet at the same time, as you're saying now, we live in a culture that increasingly seems to de-emphasize the significance of our physical bodies as core to who we are. They're viewed as something that we can infinitely change and adjust depending on what we feel on the inside. So I guess, what do you make of that? What to me feels like a contradictory kind of two different contradictory emphases in our culture.
Yeah, I think more than one thing is happening at the same time. That internalization of identity and selfhood means that our body is the place where we express that. And so we're attentive to our bodies because that's how we externalize our internal sense of identity. So it's interesting that, you know, just men's grooming products in the last 10 years have just exploded. We're far more attentive to appearance and to body image for that reason, I think, because it's one of the ways we express our identity. I think one of the other things that's happening at the same time is with media becoming more global, and obviously the internet has really accelerated this, the standards of beauty that we are being given in media are more and more unattainable and unrealistic. And technology has enabled this. Now you see an image of a movie star or whatever, or model or something. Firstly, it might not be them. That might be, you know, I remember when Pretty Woman first came out, it was Julia Roberts' head, but someone else's body on the poster. So it may not even be the same person. Or it may be, assuming it hasn't been photoshopped, it may be a body that is itself the fruit of an exercise or dietary regimen that is just not sustainable.
Right.
So in other words, they half-starved themselves or they beefed themselves up to a kind of an unhealthy proportion just for the photo shoot.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be healthy to have a body that shape.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things mean that I think the standard of what you think is beauty is becoming ever more remote. And so I'm sure that is a massive contributing factor to the ever escalating instances of body image issues. And that's the case with men as well as women, and which people are only feeling worse and worse about themselves physically.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it, at least.
And then how does that fit then with this de-emphasizing of our physical bodies as core to who we are? Is it just that then they become primarily viewed as a canvas, so to speak, for expressing sort of our individuality, our identity as, you know, internal beings?
I think that's exactly right. And the real contradiction here is that on the one hand, we culturally think we're secularists and materialists, but then on the other hand, we're putting all of our focus on the non-material understanding of who we are. We've come up with this concept of an autonomous self that is separate from our physical bodies, and the point of our bodies for many people is simply to make them reflective of our inner self in some way. And so in as much as we're attentive to our bodies, it's not because they have any intrinsic value and meaning in themselves, but we need to attend to our bodies so that people can see who we are.
Yeah.
And what kind of person we really are.
Well, and as you were saying, sometimes even because we want our bodies to be this finely tuned expression of who we feel we are, we're even willing to do things to our bodies that aren't actually in our best interest, aren't actually healthy for our bodies.
Yeah. And we're not the first generation to have that issue, but I think we're the first generation where it's built on these particular anthropological foundations and with the kind of cultural, technological ways in which these things are being done today.
Yeah. Yeah, in your book, you give some examples of things in our culture that sort of illustrate our society's views of our bodies. And one example is the movie Avatar. I wonder if you can explain, how does that film convey a certain view of our bodies that we might not even notice?
Yeah, Avatar came out in 2009. It was the biggest, highest grossing movie ever, I think, for a few years. And there's more of them on the way.
Yeah.
And the premise behind Avatar was, it was set in the future. There's this distant moon where this race lives, and there's a way for some humans to kind of infiltrate that race by adopting avatars, so that they have, if you like, they don the physical bodies of that species. I mean, it's fascinating in and of itself, but I think one of the things it reflects is an idea that you can be yourself even if you have the body of a different species.
Mm.
I mean, switching out your body, not just for another human body, but even for another humanoid species, doesn't change who you are.
Yeah.
It shows how incidental our physical bodies are in our understanding of who we are.
Mm.
I could just as easily be me with some other kind of body. You had a similar thing with Ready Player One, and the idea that you live in a virtual reality where you can pick whatever appearance and form you want to take, whether humanoid or non-humanoid, and it doesn't change who you are. But we know from the Bible that our physical bodies are not incidental. I can't understand fully who I am apart from the physical body God has given me.
Mm. Well, one of the interesting things about Avatar is that the main character, if I'm not mistaken, he is a paraplegic. He can't walk.
Yeah.
At least he can't walk. I'm not sure if he could use his arms or not. But I think there was this subtext of he then gets this avatar that allows him to do more than he actually could do with his own body. And so there's a sense in which it was almost viewed as an upgrade to his actual body.
Yeah, he might say something along the lines of, I can be more me with this body than I could have been with the old body.
Yeah.
And that's how many people are tempted to think today.
Yeah. So how do you think about that then when it comes to many of the things that often feel broken or maybe even dysfunctional about our bodies? I think that's a common experience that maybe we've all had to different extents. There's things about our physical bodies that either don't work the way that they should work, or they don't work the way that we wish they worked. How do we balance that recognition with an appreciation for the body that God has given to us?
The Bible helps us hugely with these things because it doesn't give us a diminished view of the human body, but it doesn't also give us a naive and idealized view either.
Mm.
So we have both the doctrine of creation and the doctrine of the fall. The doctrine of creation shows me my body is a gift and a calling. The doctrine of the fall shows me that it may not be the gift I would have chosen or the calling I would have wanted. The Bible shows us that there is a brokenness to the physical creation. Paul talks about creation being subjected to futility and frustration. That includes our physical bodies. So the Bible can account for the fact that our bodies experience brokenness. We experience affliction. We experience a lack of harmony between, you know, how we think about our body and ourselves. So it's important to remember that. The Bible doesn't only show us the brokenness, it shows us the kind of glorious createdness as well. But we have to hold both of those together, otherwise we'll have a very skewed understanding of what it means to be human. I'm struck that in Psalm 139, David can say, I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And he's saying that of a fallen body.
Hmm.
He's not saying that of a perfect body. So even with our aches and pains and heartaches, we can still say we have been fearfully and wonderfully made.
Hmm. Yeah. So what are some ways that maybe within the church in particular, among Christians, that you've noticed that people can subtly devalue their physical bodies? perhaps without even knowing it?
I think in a whole host of ways. I mean, one way is just to think our bodies are spiritually irrelevant and therefore we don't look after them, we don't value them.
It seems like it's actually pretty common. People probably wouldn't say it, but to view our bodies as sort of like a vehicle, a suit for our souls that sort of gets us around, helps us live in a physical world. But the real core of us, the important part of us, is our spiritual selves.
I think a lot of people feel that way, and that the body is not much more than a kind of rental. You know, you drive it around for a bit and then you get rid of it. You know, it's not there as a permanent thing. Don't get too attached to it.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that is a very prevalent and deeply unbiblical view of the body. And we see that reflected in lots of ways, from the Christian who thinks, well, what I do with my body isn't spiritually relevant, so therefore it doesn't matter if I sleep around or something else. You know, that's not the spiritual part of me.
Mm-hmm.
God's not interested in my physicality. Or you think of the pastor who so overworks that he does his own health in because he's thinking the only spiritual thing going on here is the ministry, and he will do that even to the expense of his physical health.
Yeah. How do you, on that particular point, how do you fit that with some of what Paul says, say, in the New Testament, where he talks about exerting himself, even in some ways spending his physical body, being willing to sacrifice his body in many ways for the sake of the gospel, for the sake of his ministry calling? How do we understand? Because that's probably a response that many pastors or people who are in some kind of full-time ministry will say is, you know, I know I'm running at a crazy pace, but I feel like I'm called to do this. I need to do this, and it's worth it.
Yeah. Well, I think the answer is Paul is the one who talks to us the most in the New Testament about stewarding our bodies. He talks about that in Ephesians 5, where he says that our natural and correct impulse is to feed and care for our bodies. In 1 Timothy, he talks about physical training being of value. So the sacrifices Paul ends up making for the gospel are not because he's got a low view of the body. He knows he has one life to live, and it's more that he's willing to sacrifice comfort and even safety. That's different to someone who has a low view of their physical self and just can't be bothered to look after themselves properly, either with a work-rest pattern or in what they eat or in exercise and that kind of thing. So it's not an equivalent thing.
Yeah. In the foreword to your book, Paul Tripp notes something concerning that he's seen within the church for years. He writes, "I've been bothered that an over-spiritualization of the gospel would leave us with a Christian culture that is body ignoring, if not body negative. A church that doesn't have a robust gospel theology of the body will be unprepared to meet this generation's philosophical, psychological, sociological, scientific, and media challenges." So I guess you've already kind of mentioned that you do see this as a somewhat common issue today. Unpack that. Is there something akin to like a Christian Gnosticism at work in our churches that we are often unaware of?
I think there probably is. Yeah, we've so relativized the significance of our bodies. We've assumed God is only interested in a spiritual aspect of me that we call the soul. And we kind of can be aloof to our physical needs and the physical stewardship of our bodies. There are Christians who think it's unspiritual to think about being careful with what you eat or careful about exercise, those kinds of things. I've said that's a very worldly concern. But actually, God is interested in the flesh. I mean, the fact that Jesus became flesh himself shows us just how much our physicality is valued by God and how fundamental it is. But yeah, I think in the guise of being spiritual, we end up being unspiritual because we're unspiritual about the things that are physical.
Yeah, I want to dig into that. You write in your book that Jesus's incarnation is the highest compliment the human body has ever been paid. So I wonder if you could unpack that. Really, that's a really big, profound statement. So help us understand what you're getting at there.
Yeah, well, the very fact that, you know, Jesus would become flesh, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. Jesus was willing to become a physical human being, and not as a temporary expedient, but as a permanent arrangement, if you like, a permanent decision. He didn't just appear human. He didn't just borrow some flesh for 3 years of ministry. He didn't just beam down aged 30. He coded himself into human DNA, was a baby in a womb, a baby in arms being nursed. He was a toddler who would have fallen over and a teenager who would have gone through puberty. He has entered into the fullness of physical human experience because he can't save us without that. And so it's foolish for us to think our salvation can be less than that. To become one of us, Jesus had to become flesh. He had to become human from the very first moments through to his physical death and eventual resurrection.
Yeah, and then what do you make of the resurrection? That is there more even to the story when we see that Christ is raised from the dead and has then this physical body?
Oh, absolutely. Again, it shows us that his becoming flesh wasn't just a temporary necessity. His resurrection is not just a stunt by which God can say, hey, Jesus won. His resurrection, we find out, is the first fruits of what is going to be an entirely renewed physical creation. He's the first resurrection among many. His resurrection body is the kind of prototype of what ours are going to be like. So Paul says in Philippians 3 that our lowly bodies will be transformed into the likeness of his glorious body. We will be raised in the future as he has been raised to the same kind of resurrection life. So he's showing where God is going to be taking us, and it is a physical future. Similarly, when Jesus ascended, he didn't ditch his body on the way. At the right hand of God the Father on high, there is now a human body. So again, it's an extraordinary compliment to pay the human body, and it shows us something of the physical future God has for us. God is not at the end of time just going to snatch our inner soul and we're going to live in then some floaty existence forevermore. No, God is going to give us a new creation in the age to come with resurrected bodies to enjoy it.
Do you ever just, as you think about the doctrine of the incarnation, this idea that God the Son took on a human body just like ours, does that ever just kind of, I don't know, stop you in your tracks as you think about that?
Not as much as it should, but it does. Because when you actually do stop and think, it's easy to, you know, the Word became flesh. We're so used to the language. It just kind of...
It's so basic to Christianity.
Yeah. But then when you stop and actually imagine it and you think about what it would have involved, it really does stop us in our tracks. You know, there's that woman who cried out to Mary, who cried out to Jesus, blessed is the mother who gave you birth and nursed you. Jesus was, you know, there was a woman who had God nursing at her breast. I mean, it's just astonishing to think about. But I think it becomes familiar to us, and we lose the sort of the surprise of it, and not least in the cultural world that the Christian message was first shared in. You know, there was no contemporary worldview that had a high view of the physical self. Everyone seemed to think the body was this gross disgusting thing you've got to eventually escape from. Yeah, so the idea of God not just becoming flesh but being raised to new physical life after death, again, is extraordinary.
Yeah, yeah. Let's dig in then to another one of those specific applications of this. One of the most provocative, interesting things that you talked about in your book was that you argue that we are a sex-obsessed culture, and yet we're also touch-deprived, and that that in some way connects to just even how we think about our bodies, the importance of our bodies. What are you getting at with that?
Yeah, we have so sexualized our understanding of intimacy that we've sort of forgotten how to have appropriate touch in much of our lives today. Touch has become a sexual category, which means that it's very easy for people who are not in a romantic relationship to go through lots of their life without receiving appropriate physical contact. We know that we're made for physical touch. Psychologists are now far more alert to the mental health implications of going without appropriate physical touch. So by putting all of our eggs in that romantic and sexual basket, we've actually worsened all the other aspects of life. And you think of a widow who maybe her family live far away and she no longer has a husband around. You know, she could go many, many days and weeks without receiving appropriate physical touch. And it's in that context I then begin to re-examine that instruction Paul gives on more than one occasion where he says, greet one another with a holy kiss. And I'm not saying that we should...
We often like to take that verse metaphorically.
We do. And obviously, each culture has its own kind of physical grammar, and a kiss isn't normally the natural standard greeting for most of us today. But the fact that Paul is saying physically greet each other, there is a holy form of touch that is appropriate as you greet one another. So it should be the case that actually churches are places where you can have healthy physical touch and healthy physical contact, where you're not literally an untouchable human being, but where the touch is thoroughly appropriate and, you know, spiritually edifying even. Paul says, greet one another with a holy kiss. There's something set apart about that physical greeting as Christians use it to welcome each other. It's familial, it's physical, it's healthy, it's what we need.
And there's something fitting about it being physical, as it kind of reflects the fact that we are physical beings.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think that our experience as a culture, honestly, as the world, our experience of the COVID-19 pandemic is going to help us to maybe recover a little bit of a realization of the importance of our embodied selves, and in particular our embodied lives in community with others? I feel like we've sort of gotten a taste of what it would look like to really go the other direction, to the extreme. and we're seeing the effects of that. We're seeing it on our psychology. We're seeing it in our relationships. And as we come back to church, you know, together more and more in the coming weeks and months, it seems like maybe there's a new awareness of the importance of that. Do you resonate with that?
I do, yes. I think we've seen the convenience of virtual meetings and Zoom and all the rest of it. There's something nice about being able to just click a button and you're out of the meeting and you're immediately at home in
your
living room
PJs
or something. Yeah. But at the same time, we're sick of it. And it's just interesting watching some of the restrictions when they get eased, just that desperate desire to be physically back together again. We are aware that we've missed something, and something fundamental. You know, we see this even in the New Testament. John writes in 2 John, you know, I've got more to write, but I don't want to use pen and ink. I want to see you face to face so that our joy may be complete. There's something incomplete about only relating to someone, in his case, through pen and ink, or in our case, through through pixels on a screen. It's great. It's way better than nothing, and it's not without merits, but it's just not enough.
Yeah.
And you know, I was grateful during the pandemic for our church's live stream. I was, you know, it was amazing to have that. But in one sense, it just made me want to be physically there even more.
Yeah, yeah.
So I hope it has meant we don't take that for granted.
Yeah. So I think for even those who would affirm and embrace the Bible's teachings about our bodies being good gifts from God, they're central to who we are as people, as Christians. Nevertheless, our bodies are often, you know, associated with negative feelings that can really be difficult to deal with. And I think one of the most common negative feelings that we all, to different extents, probably have struggled with at times, related to our physical bodies, is shame, for a whole host of reasons. I wonder, is that something that you can resonate with? And what word would you give to the person who struggles with shame for some reason?
It's very, very common. In fact, there's almost no one who hasn't experienced that in some degree. And it may be shame. It can be for any number of reasons. It may be shame to do with appearance. It may be shame to do with what we've done with our bodies, or shame at what has been done to our bodies by others. I think that the most important thing to know in that context is, in the language of Hebrews chapter 4, we have a high priest who is not unable to sympathize, but who has been tested in every way, yet without sin. And so when Jesus came into this world, he experienced the fullness, not just of being a human being, but he experienced the fullness of human suffering. Where I come from, it's sometimes joked that wherever the Queen goes, she only smells fresh paint. And, you know, she would have a very unrealistic sense of what the real world smells like if that was the case. There's none of that with Jesus. He experienced the worst of human life on this planet. And that verse in Hebrews is telling us there's something comprehensive about the sufferings of Christ that means there's no kind of pain we can go through that Jesus doesn't know more about than we do. And that's true of shame. Not that Jesus had reason to be ashamed of himself, but, you know, Isaiah 52 tells us that he was someone men hid their faces from. His suffering and crucifixion was so horrific, people would turn away from it. People couldn't bear to look at it. So for someone who's feeling intense shame about how they look, I think it's a comfort for them to know that Jesus knows what it's like to have people actually really not want to look at you. He was physically abused by others. He was stripped naked, so there was an element of sexual humiliation going on there. We know that he was mocked and tortured, and so people who bear the shame of how they've been treated by others again have in Jesus someone who truly and deeply understands that. One of the pains of this life is sometimes going through a hardship and you feel as though no one really understands what you're going through. And that can be true, sadly. But it's never true when it comes to Jesus. He really does know. He experienced the fullness of the pains and griefs of this world.
Have you ever struggled to feel gratitude for your physical body?
I think a lot of the time it never occurred to me to. You just assume your physicality. It's actually working on this book that has really made me realize I need to thank God for my body, with all its quirks and frailties and imperfections. I keep coming back to Psalm 139, David saying, "I praise you For I have been fearfully and wonderfully made. My physical life is a gift from God. My physical body is a gift from God. And even if it's causing me pain, it is still, as a body, a gift from God. So thankfulness, I think, is something that just doesn't occur to us in many respects, and particularly for those who suffer either because of physical affliction or who just hate some aspects of their body, it can be very counterintuitive to be thankful for it. But it actually, by the same token, is a spiritually very healthy thing to do, to thank God for our bodies.
Yeah. Maybe as a last question, as we look to the future, what is our ultimate hope? What is our future hope when it comes to our physical bodies?
In Romans 8, Paul says we await our adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. There is a physical redemption that is yet to come. So particularly as we pass our physical peak in this life, whatever age that is.
I was doing some gardening the other day and stood up from a crouching position, and I was like, wow, my knees hurt a lot more than I remember this happening.
Yeah.
Even a few years ago.
I remember a friend of mine coming to church one day, kind of bent over. He was not an old man at all. He was in his early 40s, but he was bent over in visible pain. I said, what on earth have you done to yourself? And he said, this happened while I was asleep. All I did was got out of bed, and this, you know, something about the way I slept injured, you know, when you're in your 40s.
Sleeping's dangerous.
It is. It's an extreme sport. So even as we pass the sort of our physical best, we can know that our best physical days are ahead of us and not behind us. I think particularly for Christians with long-term health issues and afflictions and pains, it is such a comfort to think this is not the only experience of physical life you're going to have. This is not the only experience of a body you're going to have. And there will be a resurrection body that will be without those pains and afflictions and shames. Bodies that will be perfectly suited for us to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. And so we all have that to look forward to.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for taking the time today to talk to us about our bodies and why they matter more than we might think.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was Sam Alberry on our physical bodies. For more, be sure to check out his book with Crossway, What God Has to Say About Our Bodies, How the Gospel is Good News for Our Physical Selves. Available online or at your local Christian bookstore. For more interviews like this, subscribe to the Crossway Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review, which helps us spread the word about the show. Crossway is a not-for-profit Christian ministry that exists solely for the purpose of proclaiming the truth of God's Word through publishing gospel-centered content. Visit us today at crossway.org.